I'm Mark Steiner. Tomorrow on April the 4th, it's the 45th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King. Rather, maybe I should say, it should be our remembrance of this tragic day in Memphis, of a man who symbolized the fight for freedom in America, the fight to end segregation, the fight for social justice in our country, to end poverty, to build a more just society, and to end the war in Vietnam. The depth of the meaning of his legacy only grows with time. And one of the conversations I've been wanting to have for a long time has to do with the spiritual legacy of Martin Luther King and some of the people who have deeply affected that legacy and affected him during his lifetime. And one of those people is Howard Thurman, who we'll be discussing today, one of the great theologians of our time, who I've always said, in not really a joking way, that if he had not been African-American at Howard University, he might have been more well-known in America. And we are going to talk about him. And we're also going to talk about the Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel, who became a close friend, confidant, and spiritual friend of Martin Luther King's, and walked side by side with him. And today we'll be talking with Dr. Edward Kaplan. He is the Kaiserman Professor in Humanities at Brandeis University, author of the book Spiritual Radical, Abraham Joshua Heschel in America, 1940 to 1972, and wrote an incredible essay on Howard Thurman that we'll share with you on our website. And we're here also with the Reverend Dr. Brad Braxton, who is a senior pastor at the Open Church in Baltimore and is the Lois Craddock Perkins Professor of Homiletics at the Perkins School of Theology in Dallas, Texas, who joins us in studio. Dr. Brad Braxton, Professor at Kaplan, Edward Kaplan, welcome. Good to have both of you with us.
It's good to be with you, Mark.
Thank you very much.
And I appreciate you taking the time here. This is. Let me start to give you, ask you both to give us an overview just of the two men we're talking about. Because you hear the name Heschel all the time. I think most people don't even have a sense of who Heschel really was, other than this some rabbi who stands by Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
You know? So let me ask you to start that, if I might, Edward Kaplan, to give our listeners a sense, an overview of this man, Dr. Heschel.
Yes. Well, his full name is Abraham Joshua Heschel Heschel. So he's named after one of his ancestors, who was a great Hasidic Rebbe, whose name was Abraham Joshua Heschel. So Heschel was born in Poland in 1907, and both his parents belonged to distinguished dynasties of Hasidim, which is a form of Judaism that puts a special emphasis on prayer, study, and the closeness to God. He was brought up in Warsaw. He received and earned his Ph.D. in philosophy at the University of Berlin in 1933, the year that Hitler came to power. And Heschel was able to immigrate to the United States in 1940, where he taught at first in the Reform Rabbinical Seminary in Cincinnati, Ohio. And then from 1945 to his premature death in 1972, he taught at the Conservative Rabbinical Seminary, the Jewish Theological Seminary. So Heschel was primarily a man of study, a man of prayer, but also particularly influenced by the Hebrew prophets. And it's his work on the Hebrew prophets that really impelled him to become involved in moral and even political issues in the United States in the 1950s, but especially in the 1960s before he died.
And let me just turn for a brief description of Howard Thurman, and we'll come to both men in more depth.
Brad? Yes.
Howard Thurman perhaps is best described as a prophetic or pragmatic mystic. And I'll certainly give some fuller definition to that, but a quick word biographically about him. Thurman was born in 1899 in rural Florida and came of age, of course, in the deeply segregated South. and those experiences of racial segregation and the hatred and violence that were rife in our country during that period made a profound impression upon him and moved him in the opposite direction. As he witnessed so much exclusion, it of necessity made him a spiritual prophet of inclusion. He was a theologically trained theologian and moved with great facility in many academic institutions. He taught at Morehouse and Spelman. He later went on to teach at Howard, and then went to become one of the founders of the Church for the Fellowship of All Peoples in San Francisco, a remarkable experiment of racial inclusion in a congregation in the 1940s. And then from there went on for many years to serve as the dean of chapel at Howard University. And his sermons were widely broadcast, and he became very much a voice of the movement, not only the civil rights movement, but broader movements across the country and the world for inclusion. Let me just say a word now about this notion of Thurman as a prophetic or a pragmatic mystic. When I think of Thurman as a mystic, what I think about is what an old deacon used to say. He used to say there are some people who see with their third eye and they hear with their third ear. That is, that there are people, and all of us should strive to be those kind of people, but particular people in our world who have heightened spiritual apparatus by which they can tune in to the sights and vistas of heaven and to the frequencies of the sacred. And that's what Thurman did so powerfully. He had his eyes tuned to other horizons, and he leaned in with his third ear and tried to hear the harmonic resonances of other worlds to bring them back to make this world a better place.
Edward Kaplan, I just jump in before we go back to Rabbi Heschel.
And
talk a bit. Your experience about Thurman is not just an intellectual and spiritual experience in terms of somebody who's written about him and thinks about him, but you had an intense relationship with him.
That's right. Through my father, Kitty Kaplan, who was the national president of the NAACP from 1965 to 1976, I met a large number of very prominent African Americans, one of whom was Howard Thurman, who was dean of chapel at Boston University when I was growing up. And I met Thurman as a teenager. I was in high school, very unhappy with my rabbi, who was a cold rationalist, but otherwise a wonderful person, a social action rabbi, but who really did not grasp the inner dimension of spirituality that Dr. Braxton referred to as mysticism, and developed conversations with Thurman and his wife, Sue Bailey Thurman, over the years. And in fact, I would say that my relationship with Dr. and Mrs. Thurman prepared me to understand and appreciate Rabbi Heschel when I met him in 1966 when I was a graduate student in New York. So I say that I have Howard Thurman inside me as well. Very privileged and grateful for that.
And I think that's what's moved me so much about the way you wrote about him in that essay. And I want to come back again. I know we're kind of just an overview here, but I think it's important to set this up for everybody in terms of who these men were and what they meant to King. And let me start again with Rabbi Heschel and Dr. Heschel in how they met. And I know there was they met at this conference, Edward Kaplan, in 1963 at the White House.
That's right. It was actually before the White House conference. It was the first national conference on religion and race to take place in the United States. Was in Chicago in January of 1963 to commemorate the 100th anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation, which was signed by President Abraham Lincoln in January of 1863. And Heschel made a very moving speech at the beginning of the conference, and at the end of the conference, King made an extraordinary speech of his own. But in the meantime, they met and established a bond that just continued as strong and to become increasingly deep through their common interest, obviously, in civil rights, but also in the religious opposition to the Vietnam War.
And Thurman, Howard Thurman, even though he was not someone who participated in sit-ins, was an activist, he was the spiritual ear and light and sounding board for Dr. King and many others.
Indeed. I think what needs to really be sounded about Thurman's role in these broader movements for justice is the way in which Dr. Thurman helped activists to realize that you needed a profound spiritual interiority if you were going to speak to the exteriority of, at that point, a society, a country that was malformed in its external manifestations. And there's often a sense, even today, as I work with leaders around social justice, that social justice and the prophetic movement is simply about external realities. Dr. Thurman helped us to realize that often the things that are interior and invisible are as important to matters of justice and injustice as those things that are external and visible. And we must draw the link between those realities. I once read a quotation, a very chilling quotation, that makes this point. It was about apartheid in South Africa. And the writer said that long before apartheid became a social program, it was an idea in somebody's mind. And so many of the manifestations of injustice that we see so concretized in our current world, and certainly during the time of Heschel and Thurman, those concrete manifestations began as invisible ideas. And so Thurman invited us to dig down deeply into our interiority and excavate that land first.
That's right, and I think that's what Heschel and Thurman have in common. They both exercised professional roles in teaching or even public inspiration, but they were focused primarily on the inner life, on the inner relationship with God through prayer, and that strengthens the activist to tolerate the difficulties of the social movements that they were involved in. So that really, I like Dr. Braxton's characterization of a prophetic mystic, because that's also true of Abraham Heschel.
I'm sorry, you want to say go ahead, Brad.
And thinking about this relationship between the interior and the exterior and drawing trajectories from Heschel and Thurman to King, what comes to my mind is this powerful depiction in one of Dr. King's writings. Many people refer to it as the kitchen table moment.
Oh, yeah.
Where he really began to feel like the violence, the threats upon his life and the lives of so many other of the leaders was just no longer worth it. And he was beginning to doubt whether he should continue. And he talks about this moment where he was sitting at his kitchen table all by himself and was overshadowed by the loving and encouraging presence of God. And I lift that because so often when we think about Dr. King, we attempt to move him from his spiritual rootedness, the kind of rootedness that we see in Heschel and Thurman. And you can only face the kinds of threats that constantly he and others faced. You can only go through having been stabbed, and you can only stare down Bull Connor and fire hoses if there is a profound interior life where you know there is a loving God who is with you no matter what. And so I think that's another way that we can help to understand the impact of these great spiritual thinkers upon Dr. King. He himself had certainly that mystical experience, and I'm sure many others of which he never recounted, that put steel in his spine. We often know about his silver tongue, but he had a steel spine as well that came from that deep interiority of the mystical presence of God, saying, no matter what, I will be with you.
That's right.
And that interiority that you talk about, Rob Braxton, Edward Kaplan, I was thinking about things you were writing about Heschel, that both men, Heschel and Thurman, had that interiority, had that sense that everybody has a special relationship that comes from the inside.
That's right.
Absolutely.
And for Heschel, who began his American career in the 1940s, he had to confront the predominance of sociological conceptions of religion. And that's where the Hasidism comes from. The Hasidism is a pietistic movement among traditional Jews in Eastern Europe that began in the 18th century with a charismatic leader called the Baal Shem Tov, the master of the good name. And this Hasidism that Heschel represented was open to modernity and sought to help people integrate the inner life and the life of social and ritual responsibility.
I'm curious, I don't know this, I've been reading your book, Spiritual Radical, I'm so happy I discovered it and read it before today. Did Heschel and Thurman ever meet?
Not that I know of. And I certainly talked with Dr. Thurman about Heschel, but I don't think they ever met. If they did, I would know it.
Just, I mean, because their sense of social justice and their spiritual steel, so to speak, that both affected Martin Luther King.
Yes.
And passed through him in many ways, but two of them never seemed to cross paths.
No, Thurman quotes Heschel in one of his books of meditations, but there isn't an extensive discussion of Thurman. And I know that Thurman knew Heschel's writings, obviously. But I think they were in their own spheres. And Heschel died rather young in 1972. I think Thurman died in 1980.
I think what is amazing, if there's no way for us to document that these men met, nonetheless, they still vibrated on the same frequency.
That's
and,
right.
You know, as a preacher, and certainly these men were very gifted with the written and spoken word, I trade primarily in images. Right?
Yeah.
And so the image that comes to my mind here, and I'm certainly no musician, but that is the image of a tuning fork. Mm-hmm. That the way a tuning fork works is that when it's struck and it gets a particular frequency, if another tuning fork is brought into proximity, it will pick up that frequency. Mm-hmm. And
that's
I think
right.
there are spiritual luminaries in our midst. Some of them are well known, and many of them are just what I call practical, everyday alley philosophers. I've met many of the alley philosophers here in Baltimore, deeply spiritual people walking around the streets, and then some who inhabit university chairs. But they are vibrating to another frequency. And even though they may not ever meet, there's that same frequency that we hear humming in their hearts and minds.
I want to explore a couple of things. There's some words, and if I can find them, I'm not sure I have them right. One comes from your book, Dr. Edward Kaplan, your book Spiritual Radical about Abraham Heschel. And this is the words that Abraham Heschel spoke at the funeral of
yeah.
Martin Luther King. And I just want to read them. Let's just talk with them for a minute. He said there, because he went to both the funerals, this is a powerful moment for Abraham Heschel when Martin Luther King was assassinated, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
He said he was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And as one with whom men hid their faces, he was despised, and we esteemed him not. Can we wrestle with what that means, what Heschel was saying here?
Yes, that.
Edward, why don't you start, then we'll go to Brad.
Well, I was going to ask you, because it's a suffering servant from Isaiah, which is a text that both Christians and Jews refer to, but in very different contexts. For a Christian, the image of the suffering servant is a prefiguration of the coming of Christ. For Heschel, the suffering servant is the person in the present who is in the minority and who is persecuted by those who don't have the courage to take prophetic judgment and take bold political action. In the case of Heschel, it was the civil rights movement, the movement to save Soviet Jewry, and the opposition to the American intervention in Vietnam, which Heschel considered to be a criminal act, and this was also shared by Martin Luther King.
When I think about the use of that quotation from the prophet Isaiah, what speaks most deeply to me is the notion of being despised and rejected. And I think there is an opportunity for us to have some real contemporary and forward-looking application with this. I spent a lot of time as a seminary professor educating emerging religious leaders. And one of the points that I tried to make is the term prophet is basically not something that should be on your lips. One should be very careful how one refers to oneself as a prophet. The term prophet is often best spoken by folks who come years later, who have an opportunity to really evaluate what you have done. And it is a realization that often in the moment, if in fact you are genuinely trying to be a prophet, you will be seen as a social outcast.
Yes.
In fact, there is that marvelous moment in Heschel's book, The Prophets. Early in the book, he gives a depiction of the biblical prophets, and he basically says prophets were not the kind of people you would want to hang around. These were quite these were frightening people because they looked and they saw and they brought back what they had seen and heard, and it often frightened the current society because it called that society to accountability. So the notion that any of us would dare to be prophets should give us real pause. And I was with some of our congregational leaders last night, and I told a story that I had heard when doing a program on Dr. King a few years ago with Randall Balmer, who is a great writer in our country, teaches in New York. And he writes about how Dr. King was welcomed into the White House quite frequently, you know, in the early and mid-60s. But the moment that he came out against the Vietnam War, he became, in a very real sense, an enemy of the Johnson administration. So,
and I think it's interesting, Edward Kaplan, that when that same thing happened to Heschel.
That's right.
In the Jewish world, when he came out against the war.
That's right. That's right. He was really, I would say, vilified, but he was expressing himself in the idiom of the prophets, which Heschel said is an octave too high, too intense, yes, too demanding, too uncompromising, really.
Yes.
And it's true that most of that Jewish establishment did not follow Heschel in that respect. And also, just to add a little kind of a sidebar, Heschel was very active as a theological consultant to the American Jewish Committee during the Second Vatican Council. And Heschel was severely criticized by some rabbinic groups for his willingness to enter into dialogue with the intellectual and spiritual leaders of the Catholic Church.
If Thurman and Heschel and King were eavesdropping on this conversation, and my spirituality, you know, suggests that indeed they are, the word I feel, if I may do my very best to channel them, and I say that very cautiously, the word is courage.
Yes.
courage, the ability to sleuth after, to chase after truth and love and hope, irrespective of what it might cost us.
Yeah.
And as I look at our current political climate, so much is about counting votes, sizing up the caucus on the left or the right side of the aisle, whether we're talking about local, state, or national legislatures.
Mm-hmm.
But where are those from the grassroots to the ivory tower to corporations to faith communities who say, for the sake of a better world, we will follow truth and love and dignity and hope, no matter what it might cost us?
We're here talking with two very special men who I think a great deal of in their work. You just heard Dr. Edward Kaplan. He is the Keiserman Professor in Humanities at Brandeis University, author of the book Spiritual Radical, Abraham Joshua Heschel in America, 1940-1972. And the Reverend Dr. Brad Braxton, who is Senior Pastor at the Open Church here in Baltimore and the Lois Craddock Perkins Professor of Homiletics at the Perkins School of Theology in Dallas, Texas. We're talking about the two great theological thinkers and spiritual men, activists in both in different ways, who deeply influenced Martin Luther King, one being Howard Thurman and the other being Abraham Heschel. And we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to explore this Jewish African-American connection that Thurman wrote so much about and believed. We're going to talk more about Rabbi Heschel's crossing that divide himself and what that meant for him, and look at how Howard Thurman discovered nonviolence in India, and how all three of these men were devoted to nonviolence and what that meant for them when we come back, and how that influenced Dr. King. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. This week marks the 45th anniversary of the assassination of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. Right now we're talking with Dr. Edward Kaplan, who is the Keiserman Professor in Humanities at Brandeis University, author of the book Spiritual Radical, Abraham Joshua Heschel in America, 1940-1972, the Reverend Dr. Brad Braxton, who is Senior Pastor at the Open Church here in Baltimore, and also the Lois Craddock Perkins Professor of Homiletics at the Perkins School of Theology in Dallas, Texas. And gentlemen, I want to kind of explore, there's so many areas here to talk about, but I wanted to talk a minute about nonviolence and both these men. And Howard Thurman, there's a lovely book that I've not interviewed the authors yet but plan to, called Visions of a Better World, Howard Thurman's Pilgrimage to India and the Origins of African-American Nonviolence by Quentin Dixie and Peter Eisenstadt. An amazing journey that Howard Thurman took in 1935 to India, where he met Gandhi, and nonviolence started becoming a way of life. And then he went back to Howard University and during World War II actually counseled the black soldiers who fought in the war via correspondence and before they went, fought for their rights as American soldiers, said they were as good as any other man to fight, yet he was a believer in nonviolence and counseled these men who went to war, these black men who went to war in World War II, but as a nonviolent spiritual human being. So I wonder if we could talk a bit about that part of Thurman, and then we'll talk about Abraham Heschel's kind of journey through nonviolence as well, because of what he experienced with the Holocaust and more. So who wants to start? But I'd like to start, yes, and we'll go to Edward Kaplan about this period of time in Thurman's life.
I think it's very important for us to understand the dimensions of a complete moral life. And often people want simply the vertical dimension, that is, between God or some transcendent being, the sacred, and themselves as an individual. But a complete moral life is one that recognizes that that horizontal axis is equally as important. How do I live in a meaningful and holy way with sisters and brothers? And there is a profound moment in Thurman's book, Footprints of a Dream, where he recounts the beginning of this radically inclusive congregation in San Francisco, where he talks about in 35, as you mentioned, going to India. And when he's in conversation with colleagues there, someone really pushes him and presses him on the issue and basically says, why are you here? And there's a profound moment, and Thurman recounts, where basically his host says, as I understand it, you are a Christian minister, and Christianity has been part and parcel of the oppression of your people. You are, and there's a great line where he says, you are a traitor to the darker peoples of the world. Why are you here? We are darker peoples. We are your siblings in this great global struggle. And Thurman suggests that that moment deeply impacted him. And what it fundamentally did, and this is this point on nonviolence and the horizontal axis, it compelled him to come back to the United States and ask, is it possible to form communities where we can actually live together as sisters and brothers, and especially religious communities? And then for the rest of his life, he set out on that experiment, testing, can religion be a force that unites and not divides? And Thurman was very mindful of the potential danger of religion, that we all know that religion has sponsored some of the worst violence that this globe has ever known.
And Edward Kavanaugh, could you tell us a bit about the conversations you may have had with Howard Thurman just about that period in his life?
Well, most of the conversations I had were personal.
Mm-hmm.
And so very specifically tied to my problems at the time. But certainly the civil rights movement and nonviolence were, you know, a presupposition of any conversations that we would have. And I'm glad that Dr. Braxton really zeroed in on that surprise and that tremendous, horrifying insight that the Thurmans received in India about the dangers of Christianity as a colonial conception.
Yes.
And in terms of Heschel's understanding of nonviolence, you're right that he experienced directly the rise of Hitler. As a graduate student at the University of Berlin from 1927 to 1933, and Heschel remained in Berlin until 1938, when he went to Frankfurt to work with Martin Buber in his adult education program, and then was able to find an exit visa to eventually end up in the United States. But Heschel was really a witness not only to the richness of Jewish life in Europe before Hitler, but obviously the destruction of those several Jewish civilizations by Hitler, and more so, the desecration of the human image. And that was Heschel's approach, that every human being is an image of God and should evoke our reverence, not contempt. Reverence for the human image of the divine.
You have in the essay here, I hope I have it right here, let me just say this, I wrote this out, and we can comment on this about Heschel before we go back to Thurman and his idea of blacks and Jews being coming from similar oppressions and why they're connected, Thurman's writings on blacks and Jews were profound. I think I wish more people would read them today in this world when we seem so disconnected from one another.
Yeah.
Which I want to come to with the two of you. But you write that that Abraham Joshua Heschel, this is what you wrote, asserts, quote, racial or religious bigotry must be recognized for what it is, Satanism, blasphemy. And then he says, according to Jewish thinking and about the divine, he said, the human is a disclosure of the divine, and all people are one in God's care for mankind. Many things on earth are precious, some are holy. Humanity is the holy of the holies. To meet a human being is an opportunity to sense the image of God, the presence of God. Could you pick up from there, Dr. Kaplan?
Yes, that's the essence of Abraham Heschel's sacred humanism. And it's also what I call spiritually radical, because every single human being, no matter what their origin or status or capacity or incapacity, is an image of God. And that, I think, is the great challenge of all religions, to really restore the sense of what it means to be human in the most exalted reality that's possible. In a sense, if you think about it rationally, it's not possible to have such reverence for every human being. But that's one of the positive functions of religion, to teach us to revere human beings.
And along those lines, what comes to my heart is, again, from more of an Eastern spirituality, that Sanskrit notion of namaste, the holy in me, or the sacred in me greets the sacred in you. And fundamentally, what the nonviolent commitment or impulse is a radical commitment to hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever another person comes into our presence, the divine has just walked into our lives. And that notion of hosting with tenderness and with compassion, and as Dr. Kaplan says in this wonderful essay that he has written, as Thurman suggested, when we tend to another person, when we provide what is needed to another person in their moment of need, there is nothing more sacred than that. And how much stronger and more compassionate our world would be if hospitality were simply based on, as I look across the table at you, as I talk with this brother on the telephone, the sacred is present. It would give new meaning to reaching out and touching with tenderness, and it would really help us to rethink a lot of our social policies. And if we understood hospitality is what we are called to offer to every life.
Does it make the two of you kind of, for just a moment, reflect on all the things we just talked about, that the way you've described both Abraham Heschel and Howard Thurman and their beliefs, talk about what you think that meant internally to Martin Luther King, how his relationship with these two men, very different relationships with these two men, affected that feeling and belief. And how it came about. I mean, you can reflect on both men. I mean, I'd just take one another. I'm just curious how you both think about that.
To project oneself into the mind and the heart of Martin Luther King Jr. or any other human being is rather bold.
Yes.
But why not?
I'm sorry, it is.
Why not? Because we have the historical record of their lives. And we have the books and the essays that they published. We have recordings, so that there's some plausibility. Certainly know that when I was with Howard Thurman, I felt that here was someone who lived in the presence of God, and that my own faltering faith was really less important than the faith that Thurman lived. And I can imagine, I do know that Dr. Thurman and the soon-to-be Dr. King enjoyed watching ball games on TV together, as well as spiritual counseling. So that is enough. You know, Boston is a sports town, and so there's certainly a good foundation for fellowship there, as well as the religious fellowship. And I can imagine also the thrill of Martin Luther King Jr. reading Heschel, and then hearing him speak, and then continuing the relationship mostly on the telephone, but also through personal and public meetings. And I know also that in African-American spirituality, the Hebrew Bible, the Old Testament, is a primary text, a text that we both share. And the book of Exodus and the exodus from Egypt under the leadership of Moses is something that we all share as well, as Christians and Jews, as American Jews and African Americans. So there's a lot there, and it doesn't take that much imagination, actually, to know that that took place.
When I reflect on that, the notion of Dr. King being influenced by Heschel and Gandhi, and then I'll say something about Thurman in a moment, what I believe that did knowingly and perhaps unknowingly to him was it progressively made him a global citizen. And I think that's a dimension often of Dr. King's life and ministry that we do not trumpet enough, that, of course, his primary theater of nonviolent engagement was the American South, and then eventually would go and engage Chicago, which I'll speak about, too, at some point. Nonetheless, I think through the influence of Gandhi and Heschel, he recognized that there was an impulse of injustice moving around the globe. And we certainly saw it as it began to really pick up steam in South Africa during this period as well. And so the notion that injustice and oppression, they are not singular acts, but there's a global movement, and similarly a global movement for nonviolence and for peace and justice must occur. And so I think being tutored by these figures who were on the world stage helped him to increasingly become a global citizen. And when I think about the impact of Thurman, what is so profound about Thurman, again, a reality that is not lifted, is that period where Thurman is not holding an academic post, but is actually serving as a minister in an intentionally inclusive community in the 40s in San Francisco. And that notion that the beloved community, which was a theme that appeared often in Dr. King's work, is not an abstract reality. It is something that must take on flesh and blood in our communities, which is why then another element of Dr. King must be lifted. And that is the King, not of the 63 I Have a Dream speech,
right,
but the King who went to Chicago and saw deeply structured inequities, not only at the racial level, but at the economic level, in one of the great centers of our country, and the kind of dismay and despondency. And Taylor Branch writes very prophetically about this in that third volume in the trilogy,
right,
of what it looks like when, for many, the dream of 63 is a perpetual nightmare. And I would encourage many people on this King holiday to familiarize themselves with that King. That King was much more radical than the King of 63. And I think the influence of Thurman and what community looks like when it flourishes and what it looks like when it is decimated by poverty and inequity must be lifted.
And it wasn't until really thinking about this last month or so, really thinking about Heschel and Thurman and their influence on King, and this conversation I've always wanted to have that we're having today for the first time, I always think of Chicago and the Riverside speech,
yes,
as being infused by Howard Thurman in his quiet spiritual activism, who might have not walked a picket line, but he was the advisor to all these people like King and listened to them. And when they were going through torment and thinking about what to do next, it was Thurman they turned to talk to. And I can just hear, without hearing them or knowing them, the conversations that Martin Luther King must have had with Abraham Heschel.
Yes.
And because the increasing kind of radicalization of Heschel himself in that period.
That's right. So it's actually a little... I was thinking of Vincent Harding, who did participate in the development of the speech that King gave at Riverside Church, right, that you're
yes.
talking about.
The anti-war speech, yes. right.
That's right.
Right.
Where he really, where King, he had announced it before, but it was really the most dramatic announcement of his opposition to the Vietnam War. Vincent Harding wrote a book, a little book called King, an Inconvenient Prophet. And I think that's what we're touching upon now, that the spiritual radicalism is so threatening to some people in the power structure that King was really became a pariah. And I think the notion of courage, moral courage, is absolutely essential.
Yes. And in that speech, what was so profound was the way that Dr. King showed us the strands of global injustice and this
That's
war
right.
and the ways in which you had racism at work, you had economic deprivation at work, and you also had militarism at work.
That's right.
And the way in which each of those strands then comes together to choke the life out of a country or another country or the global spirit for harmony and peace. And in our moment where we as a country are still enmeshed in international military conflict and where issues of deep economic injustice and racial inequity still abound, that speech from the Riverside Church ought to be must reading for every American citizen.
It's a speech I use rather than I have a dream every time we do something about King. I mean, he began to take on and that was the other reason he became very unpopular. He began to take on capitalism and began to talk about this word socialism that frightened a lot of people away.
That's right.
From him.
That's right.
And what that speech really shows us is what genuine patriotism looks like and sounds like. Patriots are those who love their country enough to hold the country to being its best self.
And if anything, Dr. Edward Kaplan, it didn't chase away or make shy away, but it solidified his relationship in some ways with Abraham Heschel.
Absolutely. And in fact, when I went to national mobilization of clergy and laymen concerned about Vietnam with Heschel, I understood for the first time what religion really was. Before that, I used to take walks on Sabbath afternoons with Heschel, but I didn't go to synagogue because I felt that the services were too boring.
Mm-hmm.
And Heschel, instead of talking about theology, kept deploring the horrible things going on in Vietnam, and I was annoyed. I wanted to talk about theology. It took me several years and the research and writing of the biography to figure out that that's what religion is. That's what theology is. And,
indeed.
And we really have to get that quotation from Heschel after he returned from the Selma Montgomery March. He said that he felt that his legs were praying.
Mm.
My mind.
Wow.
He was praying with his legs.
A wonderful notion.
In some ways, before I get into this, we have like about 4 or 5 minutes left, and we have not gotten into the black Jewish thing, and I want to jump into that for the last few minutes, but I just want to say this to you very quickly, Edward Kaplan. You're very lucky in this overused word, blessed. I can't stand you that word over and over again, but you're a very fortunate man to have been able to walk with both Heschel and Thurman.
That's right. And it's an awesome responsibility.
So let me talk for a moment about this very quickly in those last 5 minutes. We may come back together another day to do this in a longer session because I think it's very important. We're in a world now where nationalisms divide us, and especially in this country, black and Jewish, it's happening in many ways. And how Howard Thurman would, you know, when he gave the speech, actually, he gave the speech in Baltimore, one of the things he said was talking about the religion espoused by the lowly Nazarene has received much of a significance from the fact that its exponent was a member of a despised, circumcised minority group, Howard Thurman says, and it led to this kind of incredible discussion. And then as you quote in your piece, Edward Kaplan, he said, the Jewish community has long been acquainted with segregation and persecution growing out of it. Jews have been all the more easily trapped by it because of the deep historical conviction that they are the chosen people. The conviction is underscoring in this unique ethical insights of the prophets have tended to make all those who are not part of Israel feel some sense as if they were spiritual outcasts, mm-hmm. but just jumping down. And he likens the Howard Thurman likens what happens to African Americans in the same way, and what they have meant as a light unto the world and out of this country. And he saw that bridge.
That's right.
That so many don't see.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think we have to mention explicitly the title of Howard Thurman's book, Jesus and the Disinherited.
Right.
Which the Thurman people claim that King carried it around as he went around the country. And it's possible because it's not a very large book.
Yes.
But that book is really about Jesus the Jew and Jesus as a representative of a persecuted minority, as you very well quoted. And that is our common responsibility, I think, as Americans, as Jews, as African Americans, to heal those conflicts of self-interest and to liberate all humankind, not just individual groups.
We have spent the last hour talking about the great African-American theologian Howard Thurman, the great Jewish-American theologian Abraham Joshua Heschel, their influence and in deep relationship with Martin Luther King Jr., and we had the great fortune to talk, you just heard, Reverend Dr. Brad Braxton, Senior Pastor at the Open Church in Baltimore, and the Lois Craddock Perkins Professor of Homiletics at Perkins School of Theology in Dallas, Texas, and Dr. Edward Kaplan, who knew both men intimately, and is the Heisman Professor in the Humanities at Brandeis University, and author of the book Spiritual Radical, Abraham Joshua Heschel in America, 1940 to 1972, and also wrote an incredible essay on Howard Thurman that we will attach on our website at steinershow.org for you all to read. And I want to thank Brad Braxton and Edward Kaplan for joining us today. It's been just a wonderful conversation. Thank you both so much.
Thank you very much. It was wonderful to meet you.
We have to take a very short break, but don't go away. When we return, we're going to take you on a journey that we took to the Baltimore Outreach Services Shelter for Women and Children in South Baltimore. It's one of only four shelters for homeless women and children in our city.